Hey everyone, I'm Kari.
Hello everyone, I am Bree.
And this is CSI Talk. Hey everyone, welcome back. Another week, another episode of CSI Talk.
Hi.
Before we get into today's episode, we just want to let you all know that this is a safe space for you, okay? It's always going to be a safe space, regardless of what is happening. Whenever you want to come here, just to shut up the world, we got you. Just a couple of things before we get into today's breakdown. First, we got the news if you saw on our Instagram link. CSI Vegas is finally coming to Latin America after 2 years of a long period of wait. It's coming. It's going to premiere on October 5th at 10 p.m. Brasilia time.
Which is also the day before the 23rd anniversary.
Yeah. Because October is Halloween month. And during October, it's in, at least here in Brazil, I don't know about the rest of Latin America, they do a CSI marathon. It's a CSI all day, every day, 24/7. And we're going to have only CSI crime scene investigation. And we're also going to have CSI Vegas premiering. It's going to premiere October 5th at 10 p.m. Brasilia time, because Brazil has two time zones, but it's going to premiere at Brasilia time. We don't know if or when it is going to premiere in the rest of the Latin America's countries, but we believe that the rest of Latin America can watch, of course they can watch CSI Vegas on AXN if they want to online. I believe it's on AXN. If you just, you know, look at Google AXN Brazil live stream, and you probably can find it. It's coming. After 2 long years, it's coming. It's season one, only 10 episodes. We don't have a clue when season two is going to come, but at least season one is coming, right? Also, the last week's episode, there was a 1 day delay because Wednesday was pouring rain, and we couldn't make the server work for us. So we put the episode up on the Thursdays, but our episodes usually get put up on Wednesdays, without a doubt. Unless we have some unforeseeable problem like we had last week.
Technical difficulties.
Yeah. When it's pouring rain, sometimes we cannot make our server work, and it's no one's fault. We just have to wait until it works.
Because I'm not tech savvy.
Yeah, I tried it a couple of times, and it didn't work, and I had to wait until the...
The server itself just could have been down. It just might have been down itself, not because of your weather. Because that happens. It might have been updating.
Yeah, and well, I couldn't make it work on Wednesday, but I could make work on a Thursday. And well, today is the first day that we are going to cover an episode from CSI spinoffs. We have told you guys before that we were going to start covering CSI New York, because me and Brie, we decided to expand our show and cover one of the spinoffs, and we decided that CSI New York was the best one to cover at this moment. As we said last week, we are going to cover the very first episode of season 8 of CSI New York instead of going chronologically, because, I mean, we don't actually go chronologically when we cover the CSI episodes.
That's why I have a written down list.
Yeah. The first episode of season 8 of CSI New York is undeniable. Yeah. And the episode itself was written by Zachary Reiter and John Dove. And originally it premiered on September 23rd of 2011. And as everybody knows, 2011 was the 10th anniversary of 9/11.
The episode takes place on 9/11.
Yeah. Part of the episode takes place on the actual date of 9/11. and part of the episode takes place on 9/11/11. Well,
trigger warning,
major trigger warning.
And to anybody who lost loved ones from 9/11, whether it's the days following, or future complications due to all that smoke and ash that they breathed in, all hearts all with you.
Both of
that's what I'm saying.
Both of our hearts.
And I'm just gonna read my notes. My main notes out, because it does kind of get out of summary, because I took 2.5 pages.
Yeah. It's gonna be a little different on this episode because Marie is gonna talk about it more than I do, because she's going to speak from my perspective of someone who
has vague memories. Yeah. Because I was 4 when it happened. I just remember my dad's reaction. My aunt had to keep my cousin, who turned 5 that day, away from the TV.
Yeah, I was 2 years old. I remember nothing. I was about to turn 3 the next month, so I...
Yeah, I remember all the hate, anybody from Muslim descent, Eastern descent face, and still faces to this day.
To this day, don't wait on that. I mean, I understand. You know what? No, I don't understand the hatred. I honestly don't understand the hatred.
And there's also some backstory, because there was actually a precursor attack before 9/11 happened in the 90s. It was in the late 90s, underneath the Twin Towers. Not many people know that, but I watched for 10 years or so, actually until last year, I was watching documentaries on 9/11 every anniversary. But it's just that I started to see all of them. And after you see more than 5, you kind of get the gist.
Yeah. I've seen a few documentaries myself about it. Okay. What I don't understand is the hate, because speaking from someone that is me, of course, I can say for sure that does not represent us.
It was a small group. It was
a small group
of a small group. It was a section of Al-Qaeda.
Yeah. But that does not mean that all of us follow that perspective, because we don't. And there's a minority of us that are not even Muslim. And inside that small group that are non-Muslims, they were chased out of the country of residence because of those divergences. And I understand why the fear still plagues a lot of people to this day.
Yeah. Slow down for a couple years after we got Bin Laden, but then when ISIS started, it got ramped up again.
Yes, I know. I know, because I went to the States as a tourist when it happened. I've never witnessed it myself. But I was afraid that I would be stopped anywhere in the streets or in the airport itself because of my looks, or because of the fact that someone that comes from my country, generally they don't speak English like I do, you know, with so much ease like I do since I was a teenager. So they thought that it was weird. They thought that was really odd. So sometimes I was singled out. Of course, the authorities didn't think that I had something to do with criminal activity or anything, because I was a teenager. But they would ask me stuff like, what is your history teacher's name? Like, what grade are you in? What is the name of your best friend? What's the name of your school? Yeah. I was literally there just to see Mickey Mouse, dude. I was just there to see Mickey Mouse. I don't understand the hate. It's just hate like this will never take us anywhere. My country itself never experienced something like this. We've never had any attacks like this. Although there was a period of political turmoil that the police itself attacked a lot of citizens, but there was a lot of people that came to the streets and helped those who were hurt. remember seeing that through TV and social media. But I am really glad to know that, at least in the generation that me and Bree, we are part of, this type of hatred towards someone that is of Middle Eastern descent, or if you're Black or if you're Asian, it doesn't really matter anymore, because it makes no difference. Yeah, it honestly makes no difference.
At least to us. Because also people from our generation, it does.
There are some people from our generation that it does make a difference, but I mean, screw them, you know? Screw them. And also, so this month is Bisexuality Awareness Month, right? It's Bisexuality Awareness Month. So to any of our listeners who are bisexuals, we love you, regardless of who you love, okay?
We support you.
We support you. Also, Serena is bisexual, and Josh loves her. He didn't really care that she had a girlfriend for him. He is our supportive king, even though he's arrested at this time, but we love you, and we support you.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, on to Undeniable. The episode immediately opens with a flashback to Mac shaving, and his wife, Claire, comes in, and she's been wanting to go see the opera. He jokes he's about to go see it with a fellow cop. Then he tells her to go get something from Toothbrush Total, where she finds a tickets.
Yeah, and NSYNC song was played. Don't know which song, but I know it was NSYNC.
To her last words in that scene is, "What would you do without me?" Oh, that's powerful.
Yeah, we would find out later what exactly what he would do.
Then the episode jumps back to the present. I was in sixth grade then, because I remember my history teacher, Miss Nitchie, she did a whole lesson just on 9/11 for the 10th anniversary. Then this episode, Joe, who is the incubus, this character replaced Natalie. And it's 4 months after what happened in last season. It's been a while since I watched pre-Joe, because I do love myself some Joe. I don't like Joe. I like Coffee Joe, but I do like this Joe. I have to make a joke to help lighten the mood a little bit.
It's okay. Flack, I love Joe too.
Yeah. And then we flash to the scene where Flack is interviewing the owner of the bar, because somebody's under the table. And then flashes to Mac, who, while on the bus, has another flashback to the morning of 9/11 when he's on the bus with Claire sharing Gilbert. Back in present day, the team is at the scene, taking care of collecting evidence. Black is interviewing the crying bartender, Devin, and something does not ring right, even when I rewatched this episode for the first time in a couple of years.
This episode itself is really upsetting.
Danny and Mac have a conversation on the phone, and we find out Mac has this thing that he wants everybody who he used to work with CSI back.
Yeah, because if you don't follow it, it's because at this point in time on the storyline, Mac has left the CSI lab to go work in another lab to help identify the 9/11 victims.
And yes, that's the end. Literally right, my next point.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. But guys, we have one brain cell here. We have one brain cell. Sometimes we text each other and I text her something, she'd be like, I was going to tell you this. It just, like, last night happened again. At this point in time, Mac was working at this other lab to help identify 9/11 victims. Later in the season, I don't remember which episodes, but I think it would be, like, two episodes later. I can't remember. He would come back to the CSI lab because they were looking for another boss. And they couldn't find one. Joe was the boss at that moment. And intern boss. And even Joe, she's like, yeah, we both know that I'm just keeping the seat warm for you. She knew that he would eventually come back to the lab. That's why she wasn't hiring anyone.
Yeah, and Mac is talking to his female co-worker who's been working there for about a couple years now. And he finds out that only one victim has been identified in 1.5 years.
Yeah. Look, guys, I've been studying this for a few years now, and then by the time they take out all the victims, they really don't know who is who.
And zoom in on Mac's watch. It's 9 a.m. September 11th, 2011. Flashback sets. The radio says September. Wack is interviewing a suspect when he sees a bunch of people running to the TV.
It's not Wack, it's Mac.
Oh, no, it was Mac, sorry. I just mixed up the names real quick. In my notes, it says Mac.
I mean, close enough. I mean, one is Wack, the other is Mac. I mean,
and they both met because of 9/11.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the whole team of CBS New York would eventually meet each other in a room.
I ain't really met Adam. Lindsay and Adam may have met, but it's not for sure. That gets mentioned later on.
Benny and Flack did meet. I mean, although they did not know each other's name, Bing would.
Yeah. And it's the news about the first plane hitting the North Tower along the 90th floor. Clara calls in saying she got out, and he tells her to leave the area, because she doesn't, and watches as the second plane hits the South Tower.
Yeah, at that point in time, we don't know exactly how she died, but I think it's safe to say that maybe she was hit by some of the rubble, or maybe she didn't get hit by the rubble, and she got into the second tower to help get those people out, and she breathed in the smoke, and she died of the poison that she inhaled. I mean, we don't really know for sure. They don't really make that clear. I mean, I don't think so. I've never finished watching CBS New York, so I'm not sure if they do in the end. It forever remains to
not
figure out her CMD.
Never find her memory. But then we're back to 2011. Adam, he is making funny voices because Joe is interviewing some skinny, tall dude who looks like the stereotypical nerd. Pocket square, glasses and all.
Some glasses on. These are really pronounced glasses.
And Lindsay, who is married to the character Danny, comes in and captures him. To me, that is very similar to Greg.
Yeah, and this actor, he was in CSI Crimes Investigation before. He was in season 5. On the episode that Greg had just made CSI, if I'm mistaken, and a guy dies because Danny plays a chief who works in a company that kills bugs. He was getting into this guy's house to steal from him, and then he finds the guy and kills the guy, and then when the CSI finally catch him, they realize he's been stealing from a lot of people's houses.
During this time, Adam has been calling phone companies, waiting for the burners that we use and with the robbery and the murder to be turned on, which they do. So Flack and Danny go and arrest the perps because of Adam's help. Both perps are named Mike. Mike White is African American. Mike Flack is Caucasian.
I think it's really funny because at the time when Flack and Danny go arrest these guys, so Danny, he trips over the curtain. I'm sorry. I know this is a very upsetting episode, but that scene, he trips over the curtain, then he just gets wrapped up in the fabric, and then he falls to the ground. It's so funny. I'm sorry.
Then we find out the Mikes didn't kill Sean Peterson, who is the guy that was dead at the scene.
Yeah, they were literally just hired to rob the police.
And they admit to the robbery. So, and then Matt goes to a certain diner and meets someone who lost a son because his son was one of the first responders. Then, Matt appears at the fire station for passes for the crime lab, or his former team, I should say, and sees the pass for the man that was named Joe. That's when another flashback happens. Matt is at the scene of 9/11 as one of the towers fall and pushes a woman back to safety. A very, very quick flash forward happens to the CSI. Joe is getting coffee in her mind and remember 9/11 happened. She watches from a building. She is on the phone with her mom's smoke plumes. And she asks her grandmother to take her kids to her mother's house. And the news is talking about how now the Pentagon is hit. If you're a Pentagon is hit, I think around 10 something. And Joe knows they're being attacked. Before it was announced, it was an official attack.
Joe is really smart. At this point, she would know.
Yeah. I can't remember what Joe's job was before she was a CSI.
I can't remember. But to be a CSI, you need to at least know some things about natural science. So maybe she works at some capacity at the local government before she became a CSI.
And Matt pops up behind her. This is sort of surprisingly. Usually when people pop up behind me, even when I know it's going to happen, a.k.a. at work, Jud talks about how she moved from things around, a few things around to rattle. And she knows this is why Mac is coming back because he hasn't gone to the boxes yet. Flux drops his flashback, helping a woman through the rubble to where he meets Danny. Listener, Danny is the sergeant, is currently a sergeant, is a promotion, and beginning of the episode, she says, I wish I never got this.
Yeah, he will come back and start working at the CSI again, right? I think so.
Well, like, I think he stopped being a CSI because his family was targeted.
Yeah, because of that whole... Well, there's a serial killer that comes after him and his family. And he becomes a cop. And then he quits being a cop and becomes a CSI again.
Danny gets flat out of his flashback when Devin, the bartender, shows up. Joe tells Danny to be at the lab at 5:45. Matt gives the man Joe his invite because he really wants Joe there, and Joe says, I'm not going. Matt has in mind because the reason why this Joe, the man Joe, so I want to go is because he wants it to be for the family. Matt has to remind Joe that he is family of those who lost, too. We find out Devin was the mastermind, the bartender. Wow. Devin was the mastermind behind the whole robbery. Devin shot Sean and admits she has a problem. It's because she wanted them to rob the bar because she had a problem with Oxy. And Devin doesn't know what today's anniversary is. Because she says she's going to see Sean's face for the rest of her life. She doesn't realize what day it was. How?
Maybe she was in withdrawal. Yeah, I was watching this episode today, and when she said that, I was like, since she was addicted to Oxy, maybe she was in withdrawal?
Because the weeks prior to major anniversaries of 9/11, it gets brought up constantly everywhere. Especially if you're in New York, of all places.
She was a junkie. She was addicted to pills. I'm not playing the devil's advocate here, but... Maybe she was a junkie, she was in withdrawal or something, or maybe she was planning this robbery for a few weeks at that point. When you're planning something like this, I guess you wouldn't actually know what day was. I mean, leading up to the things. In the days or the weeks leading up to, or the day of the anniversary of a tragedy, usually... Something happens. Usually someone pulls up a copycat or something like this happens. I mean, when the JFK assassination anniversary comes in Dallas, Texas, and when the day comes around, I'm pretty sure police over there, they are overdrive because they are fearful that someone is gonna pull up a gun and kill somebody like they did with JFK. I mean, it's not unheard of that something like this would happen.
Do you remember when the 20th anniversary of 9/11 happened? Everybody was so afraid that ISIS was going to do something.
Yeah, because it is a possibility. That is a possibility. Yeah. Then I'm studying this, okay? I don't mean to sound like a devil's advocate here, but if you watch Criminal Minds, they do approach that when they have like this sniper case happening in Dallas and the days leading up to the JFK assassination, they have to go and check if it is a copycat or not. And they have to check thoroughly to know if it is a copycat or not, because this type of events, they are really publicized in the media all over the globe. So, and not just in the United States, but...
I remember a few weeks ago, somebody posted a video on TikTok of the news breaking in and announcing the attacks of the Twin Towers. And it's sad. I see people these days posting videos of kids not knowing about 9/11. Or when somebody posts a video about how Dairy Queen is doing a little sale during 9/11. No.
That's really unreasonable, and that is so out of touch with reality.
Yeah. Now, Sid gets a flashback when he's talking, because Sid is the main enemy right now.
He is tagging at John Doe, and he gets a flashback when he was helping people, and also Sheldon, who was not a Sith at this point. He was still a doctor, and he was helping people who was injured. Sheldon and Sid, they were on the same place. His environment gets brought in, and Mac is actually praying over his body, over this environment body.
He did not survive.
Yeah.
The fireman did not survive. Fast forward to round 1, 5:45. Adam is trying to fix his tie, and Lindsay comes to help him. Adam, this is the first time Adam finally meets with somebody. He does not remember much about 9/11 because he slept through it. The night before, he and his buddies, he was college, went out drinking. So he was about passed out. And when he woke up, 2 p.m., and I know, everybody knows, the world changed that day. That's when the war on terror started.
Yeah.
And we find out that even though Lindsay, who's from Montana, she was not daring there when 9/11 happened, but she knew across the country, fire brigades were getting in trucks and going to help out those in 9/11. In fact, there's at least 2 cities in my state. There's probably multiple cities in every state that have wreckage from 9/11. There's one area that I know of outside of the U.S. that has part of the wreckage, and that is Gander, Newfoundland, Canada, because they had 38 planes land there when 9/11 happened, because all air travel to the state and from the state was ordered to immediately be grounded. They are stuck there for a couple of days. One of the people who was landed in Gander lost her son, who was a fireman during 9/11. She lost her son during that attack. So Lindsay says, you know, we could have been on the same bucket brigade. Then they all go to what Mike's been hosting. It is when they, in the show, Mac is the one, which probably is true for the actor who plays Mac, because he's very involved in things like this. Mac talks about the 4 months he spent trying to help out all the souls that were lost in 9/11. And he mentions the 400 first responders live in his heart forever and pass by. And some of the extras in that scene or actual family members of those who lost loved ones.
I think this is the only time in CSA history that we have actual scene at the credits, the post-credit scenes.
And the bell claims for all the lives lost. And afterwards, there's a special announcement. And the end for the Brooklyn Wall about the 417 fallen first responders. And I checked, the site is still alive. It's the brooklynwall.org. The BROOKLYNWALL.org. You guys want to learn about the Brooklyn Wall? There it is. And to this day, like, I still think about 9/11 and my few memories from it. And there's quite a few songs about it. One of my favorite songs is Where Were You When Your World Stopped Turning by Alan Jackson. The first time I heard that song, I bawled my eyes. Because everybody who was above certain age can say what they were doing and what they wore when it happened. My mom was at work when she called my dad. My mom at that time, I was 4. She was probably still working at a store that no longer is in existence. Top Foods and Drugs.
Oh.
It's now owned by Kroger. Yeah. Because I know she worked at Top Foods until I was a couple years old. And then when I was at my first elementary school for the first couple of years, she worked at a bank, then at a Christian company. And then she's been in many odd county jobs since then. Bookkeeping jobs since then. And my dad doesn't watch much New York. This is one episode he remembers. This is one episode that probably will have been infinity for Seaside fans who watched it. All cinemas. It was. And is still powerful to this day. Because everybody who was alive then.
If you were a teenager in the 2000s, you'd probably remember like this song called Wake Me Up When September Ends. That refers to this by Green Day. Sometimes I think it's from the Grand Forces.
I know it is.
Wake Me Up When September Ends. About this, it's about this event. And I was a kid when it happened. I don't remember anything.
And there was also this musical that was produced and on Broadway a few years ago called Come From Away. And I mentioned it earlier that because it's also about 9/11. It's about the hundreds of people that were stranded in Gander. One of the people in it, Hannah, she lost her son who was a fireman. She was calling everywhere until one of the other people who lived in Gander got away from the bomb. A lot of people who there still go to Gander on the anniversary, especially the 10th anniversary. And there was one of the pilots there. What's her name right now? Oh, I should know. And of course, that's one of the songs of my favorites from that musical. But she wanted to fly the day after she got back home, which was, I think, about a week after. And the American Airlines did not let her. And when she was finally allowed to fly, she knew it was changed. When she was stepping in Gander, she actually, in the song, was like, suddenly the sun be in between me and the sky. Not the first time she felt that. This impacted everybody. And I think its impact, at least to those who think about stuff like this, for the rest of their lives.
I remember a few years ago, I read this article about this group of people that they were supposed to go and work in the towers, but they didn't go because some accidents happened before they were able to go.
Like my aunt was part of it. My aunt was supposed to be in the Twin Towers.
Oh my God, really?
My aunt, who still lives in my state, she was supposed to go there, but something inside her told her not to go to New York.
Oh, thank God. I remember when I read this article, there was like this woman that she was eating breakfast and she spilled coffee all over her blouse and there was no other work laws for her to go in, so she called in sick. And there was this other guy whose son was sick and his mother had died and he didn't want to leave his son alone, so he didn't go to work. There was this other woman who couldn't catch a cab to go, and then they heard what happened. And I mean, some people got survivor's guilt because they were supposed to be there and they weren't. It wasn't luck, it just wasn't them.
I think it's no longer considered the worst terrorist attack because of the couple years ago having terrorist attacks happening in Paris, nightclubs, concerts.
Yeah, but at the time it was considered the world's worst terrorist attack.
We had some minor terrorist attacks leading up to 9/11.
Yeah, but I don't think the investigators put two and two together until it was too late. CSI New York is a great spin-off. It does have some heavy episodes, as most CSIs do. I mean, they really do have those heavy episodes.
But I still kind of teared up watching this episode. I had to put on something happy for a little while to help me not be sad.
Okay, as we said, let's make this show of ours, CSI Talk, is a show for everyone, you know, of every race, every nationality, every gender, every sexual orientation. But today we're focusing on about an event that took place in the United States, and it's an event that sent shockwaves all around the globe.
Yeah. Like before this, there was very little airport security.
Yeah. Well, as we said in the beginning, after this, the attack on the towers happened, the numbers increased from the murders of people who are Middle Eastern, of Middle Eastern descent. And I know for a fact that every time that 9/11 comes around, every police authority in the United States, they close attention because they might have a victim of Middle Eastern descent.
They pay a lot of attention to mosques.
Yeah, they pay a lot of attention to mosques because they know that a very minority of Muslims can become enraged about what happened in the past and take up revenge on people that had nothing to do with the attacks. I think there is a CSI crimes investigation episode about how a victim was of Middle Eastern descent, and like the culprit said that on 9/11 ground, and it's his fault that this and that happened to our country. You know, this type of stuff happened. It does happen. Police authorities do pay attention to this type of events because we do know for a fact that when anniversaries of tragedies happen, somebody comes around and a copycat comes around and does some stuff like that. If you're a Marvel fan, you've probably seen Ms. Marvel. If not, Ms. Marvel is, her family is Muslim and she's also Muslim. And there is a scene in which, I mean, they're not police authorities. Technically, they are police in the show, but they are not police. You know, I mean, they're police. And they get into the mosque with their shoes on. You're not supposed to get into a mosque with your shoes on because it is holy ground, and you're not supposed to get into a mosque with your shoes on. And if you're a woman, you have to cover your hair because it's according to their customs. But the police authorities, they get into the mosque with their shoes on, and there were a few women among them, and they didn't cover their hair, even though it was the custom for the Muslim women inside their mosque to cover their hair and be completely disrespect, saying that they had to check the perimeter and do all this and that. And speaking from the perspective of someone who is a descendant of Middle Eastern, I've never faced that here in my country because it's a very mixed here, like people, like cultures mix here since the country began. It's something pretty common. There is no right way to look a Brazilian here. But if I ever go to the United States, they do question me as if I am a suspect. They question me to be sure that I am not a suspect of anything, which is completely unfair. When that first happened to me, I was 12 years old, and it traumatized me for life. And then I was racially profiled more than 10 years later, and I was in my own country trying to get a visa. I was racially profiled. This would never happen anywhere else here in the country because you look at me and you wouldn't think twice about my nationality. But I walked into their U.S. embassy just to grab a piece of paper, and I was racially profiled. And it sucks. What do I have to do to prove to you that I am not some weird caricature that you have in your mind? Do I have to carry a cross around my neck? Well, what do I have to do? Are you going to ask me, like, what master do you serve? Like, what am I supposed to say to that Jesus? That I serve Jesus, that he's my master. I understand why people are afraid of something like this ever happening again. And I understand why the security has to be amped up. And I understand why the fear is there. What I do not understand and what I do not respect is the hatred that was born out of this. Because when we watch this episode of CSI New York, they do highlight all of the good deeds and the loves that was born out of such tragedy, and it was. A lot of people came from all over the United States to help, and I'm pretty sure all the countries send a lot of help to the United States to help with this tragedy. But what I do not understand is that why some people are so filled with this patriotic desire.
That innate fear.
Yeah, and they have to blame people that have nothing to do with what happened in the first place. I was 12 years old when I was first racially profiled, and then the second time was more than 10 years later.
And it all has to do with either the U.S. Embassy or being in the U.S.
Exactly. And when that happened, I wanted to break down crying. I wanted to break down crying. It's not my fault. When it happened, I was 2 years old, and I was not even there. I was probably watching Powerpuff Girls in my room.
Or, you know, next to your mother who was watching the news.
Yeah, and probably I was playing with my doll or something like that. Not understanding anything that was happening around me. Because when you are 2 years old, you don't care about what is happening around, what is happening in the world. You're just wanting to play with your dolls or draw on the floor, or your parents have to take you to the park or do something like that. But you cannot blame someone that is Middle Eastern descended because of something that happened. It completely and utterly sucks. I understand why that fear is there. But what I don't understand is that why that fear has consumed so many people that they have to do evil deeds. It's great if you love your country. It's great if you're patriotic of your country. But it's not great when that feeling breeds fear to the point in which you think you have to kill someone else to balance the scales. Even though the war on terror happened and kind of it completely sucks, and everybody knows that at this point the war on terror generated a lot of mass casualties. It was not only terrorists that died, a lot of other people that certainly did not deserve to die, unfortunately passed away.
Yeah, a lot of the soldiers who have come back from war who helped to either enlisted or I thought they were drafted. I know a bunch enlisted or re-enlisted after the attacks happened. A lot of them speak about the atrocities that they had to do to people who had no involvement.
Cousin, yeah, he served, I don't know where he was stationed, but I know that because he doesn't like talking about it, I just knew that he served because my cousin told me about it. He served, and he is still guest streaming because of what he experienced and what happened all day. I mean, even with what we know now, we still don't know exactly what happened. We still don't know exactly what happened. I mean, just last night, I was watching Lil Mike's episode in which the young sub they were looking for was a drone operator, and he lost it because he found out that he had killed more than 200 kids in the school. And he didn't know they were kids. It happens. Yeah. Some people do come back from there, and they don't really come back. You know what I mean? Some people, they
physically come back, but not mentally.
Yeah.
We should move on, tell you what we're doing next week. Next week is What's Eating Gilbert Grissom.
Yep. And also, CSI anniversary is coming. CSI Crime Scene Investigation anniversary is coming, the first episode aired. Still don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to do something special for all of you. Next week, we're covering What's Eating Gilbert Grissom. Gilbert. It's all the same. It's literally the same. It's short. And
I know, but it's tied as Gilbert.
You all get it, right? It's Gilbert, whatever Sarah calls him.
She goes back and forth. When she's 40, it's Gilbert.
Probably when she's mad is.
Good with Arthur Grissom.
Oh, that'd be really funny. Just a reminder, CSI Vegas is finally coming to Latin America. When the day it's coming near, we'll let you know. Then you can watch it. And it's finally coming after 2 long years of wait. It's finally here.
I spent 2 years long waiting in that tower.
It felt like a long period of wait. I mean, I've seen it all, but you bet your ass I'm watching it all over again. Well, so this is it for this week's episode of CSI Talk, guys. I know it's a really heavy episode, but we hope you guys liked it. And we see you guys next week. We love you. Bye.
Love y'all. Bye. We'll be right back.